Hi, this is Brock Romanek, editor of thecorporatecouncil.net. I'm here today with Nell Minow, editor of the Corporate Library. First of all, I want to thank Nell for doing this on a Sunday morning, taking her away from all the talk shows that she's been on the last week or two since the SEC first leaked what was going to be in the executive compensation disclosure proposals. Just wanted to also say, I guess, to have this public opportunity to thank Nell for being so outspoken. One thing that I fear in the legal profession is that many of us have not been outspoken as we probably were back in the old days, and it's great to hear a lawyer out there on the issues and constantly out there on the issues, and I want to thank you for that, Nell, and wish I was as brave. I'll get there. But the first question is, what do you think of the SEC's new executive compensation proposal?
I'm a big supporter of the proposal. I am very impressed with them. Now, you have to remember, of course, that the SEC's authority is pretty much limited to disclosure in this area. Not that I'm saying they should be prescriptive, but you have to keep in mind what their scope of authority is. And in that context, I think they've done a very, very good job. This is the first major overhaul of the executive compensation rules in 14 years, and what they've done is they have really plugged up a lot of the loopholes. It used to be that we said, well, you know, once the CEO leaves the company, we really don't care that much about his compensation anymore, so we won't have very significant disclosure rules for the retirement plan. Well, so they shoveled a lot of money into the retirement plan, and they really exploited that as a loophole, and so this proposal, I think, reflects current reality very, very well. Of course, we haven't seen the details yet, and when we do, I'm sure that we will have some quibbles. But overall, I'm very happy with it.
I know your colleague at the Corporate Library, Beth Young, has done a great research report on related party transaction disclosures, and I think that's an overlooked aspect of the proposal. But how do you think once, you know, the SEC does adopt something, hopefully later this year, and more disclosures about related party transactions are made, how do you think that will impact investor attitudes towards those companies that have probably more related party transactions than we knew?
Well, I think that is very, very important. You know, just like insider sales, I always say there's a reason that the SEC makes them tell you about this. These are topics of very serious concern. And I think we saw with the current fight at Sovereign Bank or with relational investors that shareholders were very persuaded by what relational had to say because they proved that Sovereign had deliberately obfuscated their related party transaction disclosures. So I think there's a lot of pressure with or without the new rules for companies to be more forthcoming, for them to recognize that they cannot fool around with this, that shareholders will really punish them for failing to be very candid about these relationships. However, I also want to say that no matter how extensive the disclosure requirements are for related party transactions or for any other impairment of traditional notions of independence, there really is no such thing as independence on a board as long as the CEO is controlling the process of deciding who serves on the board. So whether they went to summer camp together, whether they, you know, own a boat together, whether they are in business together is relevant but not enough for you to figure out whether the board is really independent.
Thursday, there was a noteworthy development when Intel adopted a majority vote standard, replacing the plurality standard that they had. So, and obviously, with the media typically follows the money and has really paid a lot of attention to the SEC's recent proposal, but really hasn't placed, I haven't seen many articles on the majority vote movement. Where do you rank the majority vote movement in the governance spectrum?
At the very top of the list, I've never seen any initiative from shareholders gain so much traction so quickly. And I think it's a terrific initiative because, really, it makes it very, very hard for CEOs to argue that they have a right to put people on the board who don't get at least 50% of the vote. And so they're reduced to simply arguing about how to do it, not whether to do it. So that makes it a very powerful tool. And second, it does address the issue I just raised, which is if shareholders are unhappy with the board, what can they do about it? With all these additional disclosures, they've got to be able to respond in some way or they don't help. And as Commissioner Raul Campa said at the hearing, if shareholders don't act on these disclosures. They have only themselves to blame. And I think the way for them to act is that if, for example, there is outrageous compensation, they simply have got to withhold their votes for the chairman of the compensation committee, perhaps the entire committee. And I think that that will send a very powerful message.
I find it interesting that Intel's action came, I think, a day or two after the ABA's Director Voting Task Force came out with its preliminary recommendations, basically supporting the plurality standard. So
yes, basically supporting the plurality standard. It was not quite as strong a level of support as I would have liked to have seen. But the fact is, this is an issue whose time has arrived, and companies that pretend to ignore it will do so at their peril.
As you know, a small slice of the hedge funds out there have adopted an activist stance, and one concern I have, and probably others, is that these hedge funds that are very, what I call short-term activists, they might potentially abuse a majority vote standard for their own short-term gains. Do you think there's any validity to that?
I don't. And the reason is that you cannot, having been an activist and having a fund myself, I can tell you that you cannot make any progress with the company unless you can get the support not just of the hotheads out there, but of the slow, deliberate investors, the index funds, you know, the Fidelities and Vanguards and the pension funds and the foundations. And those people are not going to be swayed. Those are permanent shareholders in most of these companies, and they are not going to be swayed by any kind of a short-term gain. And we saw this recently. There was a very good example of this. A hedge fund decided to go after McDonald's. And certainly McDonald's is a company that shareholders would like to see some changes at. Nevertheless, the changes that the hedge fund was asking for were sort of the quintessential example of eating the seed corn. They're just extremely the definition of very short-term changes, and got no support whatsoever from the shareholder community. So I think that proves that it's not a concern. That does not mean that I wouldn't like to see more regulation of hedge funds, because I would. I, again, think that they're operating under a loophole, but I don't think that they're going to sway anybody. I don't buy the shareholders are stupid argument. I think that shareholders understand what present value means, and they are not going to do anything precipitous.
Over the last couple of years, more and more funds have realized the power of their voting and of course, revise their policies accordingly. If the majority vote standard becomes the norm, do you think they'll go back and revisit their policies because they'll realize that their no votes now really mean something rather than the traditional withheld vote? That
is exactly what I think will happen. The cost-benefit analysis has shifted very dramatically, and they will need to reconsider it. And I think that even companies that have not adopted the majority vote provision explicitly will have to abide by it, because I believe that if a director does not get a majority of the vote, he will not be able to get D&O insurance, and he will not be allowed to claim the protection of the business judgment rule, and therefore nobody will want to have him on the board. So I think that even if a company has not specifically adopted this policy, shareholders should recognize that they can and should withhold votes, because there will be a very powerful impact.
Great. Well, I appreciate your time.
My pleasure.